Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. An early taping. We're taping this on Tuesday, November 27th. I hope everyone had an awesome Thanksgiving break. Kai, good to have you back after your trip to the Garden State.
Yeah, man.
Your Giants did not have a successful trip. I hope you had a better performance this weekend.
Oh, I'm sure I had a better trip than the Giants. But hey, what are you going to do? I mean, I do think that was pass interference in the end zone on Odell, but does it even really matter at this point?
Well, it does because you should want the L's.
So right.
It's good for you.
In that respect.
Just trust me on that. Yeah. We'll discuss that further with Mr. Director John Murray as we are taping this NFL podcast on a Tuesday. So apologize for anyone out of sorts because of the tweaked schedule this week. We'll be back to normal schedule next week. Mike Clay will do props for us, but he'll do them tomorrow on the college football podcast, even though they'll be NFL pod, or excuse me, prop bets, because they're not posted yet. So just a little bit of confusion. We're crossing streams a little bit. So thanks to everyone. If you want Mike Clay's props, they'll be on the Wednesday college football pod. But a lot coming up here. We're going to check in with Mr. Director John Murray. He'll join us. We'll recap both of us. Success in the baby bankroll bonanza. I hit a middle, monster middle, got very lucky, as you typically have to do in middle attempts. So I'm back in the black there, as I was in the red for so long. So we're good there. And then we're going to check in with Andrew Feldman, who used to host the Poker Edge podcast. And we are going to discuss another podcast going on right now in the 30 for 30, All In, Sparking the Poker Boom. It's a podcast talking about the 2003 World Series of Poker main event. Chris Moneymaker from nowhere wins it, takes down Phil Ivey, takes down Johnny Chan. A really pivotal moment in the poker boom. So we'll check in with Andrew Feldman. He'll join us at the end of the podcast and have a good time there. And look, it's exciting times across the board. And in the NFL season, college football season, we have a lot to get into coming up.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
What a weekend. And we have to recap it early in the week from a scheduling perspective. So John Murray, Mr. Director, nice enough to tweak his schedule and fit us in with all the busyness he has going on out there in Las Vegas. How are you, my man?
I'm doing good. I'm never too busy for ESPN and Behind the Bets and you and Kai, though, DK. Come on.
Well, it's good because your popularity is growing. You're even doing podcasts in person on the East Coast.
Yeah, you know, I was back home for Thanksgiving, and Wednesday night before we hit the bars, two of my buddies, they asked me to jump in on their podcast, Purple Sector Podcast, if you guys want to find that on iTunes. And it was pretty fun. They cut together an intro for me. They got like an old friend of ours to narrate some stuff, and they cut in some sound bites from Two for the Money. You guys know what a terrific film that is. So it definitely had me laughing.
So are they allowed to use that license? Like, what is going on? We're going to talk.
I don't know.
We have a poker guest later. I don't have that kind of pull. That's why we have Bob Lee.
And they asked me, too, what do I charge ESPN? I told them it's $500 an hour if you guys want me. And I was on for an hour and 2 minutes, so I rounded it up to 1,000, and I just put them in touch with my agents. So it was fun, but it was very costly for their program.
Well, as we know, you got to bet big to win big. We got to pay some money. Yeah, you want good returns like that. But look, the Prince of Props delivered last week, Wednesday night. The little we both delivered. Wait for it. Stuffing for everyone's wallet this weekend.
Yeah, well, I was with the Prince of Props on Wednesday night, and we were looking through the props, and he saw that Colt McCoy one, and his eyes just bugged out of his head. and we released that play. Pretty easy winner. You know, it actually won before halftime. I think McCoy finished with 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And he's just much more of a risk taker than Alex Smith. He's going to turn the ball over, obviously, more than Smith did. But he's also going to, I think, give the Redskins a chance for more big plays in their offense. So I thought that was a good spot there. And we're going to go back to the Prince this week. The prop bets aren't out at the Superbook yet, but he's going to be keeping an eye on the market there. And he's going to have a release for us for Twitter later this week.
All right, so that's good stuff. We'll get into that. I was fortunate enough to hit a middle, a big middle. So I'm back, baby, as I tweeted you a GIF or GIF, whatever it was, from Seinfeld. Frank Costanza, not to be confused with the stop short Frank Costanza. So we'll get into all that later in the bonanza. But it was a very eventful weekend here for the Behind the Bets podcast. And also, we had the bat signal Friday, Sunday night. You hinted towards it on the podcast a week ago. You thought it was trending in that direction, and the Packers were, in fact, a square dog.
Yeah, you can kind of tell sometimes early in the week just the way it's setting up. And by Sunday night, it was very clear. And we had a big decision on that game after we posted all the afternoon games. We were in pretty bad shape. We needed the Vikings pretty large. And then one of our better or bigger house players came up and asked for $50,000 on the Packers plus 3.5. And we said, sure. Like, we're just going to go down with this Viking ship, or we're going to win all the money back. And fortunately for us, the Vikings did pull through. It was a huge win for the book. It could have been a really ugly week because we had all three of the favorites covered on Thanksgiving Day. And there was a lot of that was connected to a lot of parlays on Sunday, specifically the Patriots, which was a huge loser for us, and the Ravens. I thought the Ravens had no business covering that game. They got a punt return for a touchdown. Then they got a fumble return for a touchdown. I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah, we really needed somebody to knock off some of these parlays, and nobody did. Fortunately for us, we got bailed out on the Sunday night game, the Vikings coming through for the Superbook.
You know, I gave out 3 picks on Sunday, SportsCenter. Ravens were one of them. I just was big on fading the West Coast team in the East, you know, 1 p.m. time slot. And I thought they would run all over them, right? Well, they didn't run Lamar Jackson at all in the first half. I was getting very upset. And they had a, you know, turnover in the end zone. Just some stupid plays. But I just thought the Raiders were big-time flat spot there. And but all in all, you mentioned the three favorites covering on Thanksgiving. That included the Saints. So they've now covered 9 straight. They covered 13.5, whatever it closed at. And 3 double-digit favorites covered on Sunday. You mentioned the Patriots. They stopped the Jets, 3rd and goal on the 1 or whatever it was, and 4th and goal on the 1. And maybe got away with a DPI on the last two plays, those 3rd and 4th downs. But now all 4 double-digit favorites covered. Since the start of 2016, double-digit favorites in the NFL are 37-25-1. That's 60% if you round up from 59.8.
Yeah, and I thought on Thanksgiving Day, really all three of those dogs had every chance to cover. I know Atlanta turned the ball over in the red zone multiple times. I think Calvin Ridley fumbled at the 1-yard line in that game. And the Lions-Bears game came down to one play. I tweeted about it on Thursday. The Lions kicked a field goal on 4th and 1 at, I think, the 3-yard line, down by 3. And right there, I knew they were going to lose, and they did. Eddie Jackson ended up having a pick 6 to win the game and cover the point spread for the Bears. But you know, if you're the Lions, how do you not go for that 4th and 1? Even if you don't get it, you've got the Bears and a backup quarterback backed up at their inside their own 5-yard line, and you're still only down by 3 points. I mean, I thought it was a complete no-brainer for Detroit to go for that. They kicked the field goal, and they lost the game.
Kicking is for losers.
Never gets
it
old.
Is. I mean, it was a ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I mean, I thought that was going to be the worst moment of the week until the Monday night game when Mike Vrabel punted with like 7 minutes left on 4th and 8, down by 3 possessions.
and his quarterback didn't have an incompletion.
His quarterback was 17 for 17. And you know what the funniest part about that was? Okay, maybe that's him waving the white flag, saying we're not going to win this game. I'm just going to punt it. But when Houston got the ball back, he started using his timeouts to extend the game. So I've complimented Vrabel in the past, and I've liked his aggressiveness in some situations, but last night was just inexcusable. And then I think they got the ball back. When they finally got the ball back after a couple of Houston first downs, They were down by 17 points with less than 2 minutes left, and they burned through all their timeouts, and the game was, at that point, officially over.
You know what that's a classic case of? It's the Kate Fagan, who I footnoted before on the podcast, her kidnapper parallel. And Vrabel, that was the moment where he could get into the van and extend the game, but really decrease his chances of living, right?
Dude, he got into the van and he helped the kidnappers tie the constraints on his hands. I mean, he was very willingly getting into that van. I don't know what he was doing.
The better chances of staying alive would be to go for it, which is not get in the van. You force the hand early, basically. Don't let the clock be the only deciding factor. You have a better chance if you force a risky decision in the current state of the game.
Try something. Try. You have to do everything you can to win. If you can do something that gives you a 1% chance to win, you have to do that thing. You can't just sit there while the kidnappers blow your head off. You got to try something, man. I thought that was just a terrible decision by Vrabel.
So going back to that, I thought of you with that 1% chance thing because the Ravens, after giving up the pick six, were down up 17. The Raiders had the ball fourth and long on their own, like 25 with, I don't know, like 5 minutes to go, four and a half to go. And they punt it, which is, you know, it only matters for the point spread, right? They weren't coming back.
Right.
But what was their best chance of having a half a percent to win the game? To punt or go for it on fourth and long?
You got to go for it. You got to just try.
Because the pick six happened on fourth and eight, right? They were down 10, and that was the right thing to do, obviously.
Of course.
And so I was just wondering, because the point spread actually, you know, the point spread decision, because that game steamed up.
Yeah, that one, it really steamed up. And so did the Patriots. And I know you and I were texting back and forth on Sunday morning. What was the Jets play calling? When they got down to the goal line, down 27-13, and I don't think they even tried to just punch it in with the run.
No, and there was plenty of time.
Yeah, like just punch it in with the run. You don't have to resort to those ridiculous fade patterns on like second down. I mean, I thought that there was certainly a little bit of contact and by the New England defensive back, but I can see why it didn't get called. I think the bigger culprit there is the play calling for the Jets. They need to try to run the ball in there. I mean, worst case scenario is what? You get stuffed on the run and some time runs off the clock. I mean, you've got to get that touchdown right away. And I think running the ball there when the defense is spread out gives you a better chance than those fade patterns into the corner, which that's a tough play to execute.
Yeah, they had the ball third and two on the New England four at the 2 minute warning. So that's why they're trying to conserve time.
Oh, okay. For some reason I thought they were down there on second down. So that is a little bit different, but
they threw the ball second and 10 on the 12, got to the 4 yard line, then the 2 minute warning.
Okay.
But my understanding is they had timeouts left, but
we needed them to score one touchdown.
So this was this was the biggest disparity, right? Liability and ticket disparity of the year.
It really may have been. I don't think it was as big as some of the Sunday night games have been, but as far as a 10 a.m. kickoff and a Sunday afternoon kickoff, that was probably our biggest decision of the year in the NFL. There was just so many parlays coming from the Thursday games and then being extended by the Ravens covering, which was going on simultaneously. There were just some big straight bets on the Patriots. We had a guy bet $50,000 on the Patriots -9 earlier in the week, and just more guys were piling in with smaller but still, you know, five-figure type 10, 20K bets on the Patriots as we got closer to Sunday. There was just a ton of money on the Patriots. I was really hoping Todd Bowles would kick that field goal to lose 27-16. That would have knocked out some of the money. But
yeah, probably we would probably be having a different conversation today.
A different hilarious conversation, but yeah. That was a really big loser for us, but overall, we actually ended up doing okay on Sunday. Certainly, the Denver win over Pittsburgh was really big for us. And I mentioned earlier, the Sunday night game was a huge winner for the Superbook.
It was interesting that so many of the public teams were covering and how you guys were down a lot, but other books weren't. Other books were sort of like neutral, small win, small loss. It is interesting, and it really comes down to the house players, right? Like that's... That's essentially because the public is, you know, pretty consistent amongst all the casinos.
Yeah, I'm sure the public was on New England all over. I did a radio spot on Sunday morning, where they were like, yeah, we just talked to the guys at Caesars. They said they need the Jets. So I was like, yeah, that sounds kind of like what I'm looking at right here at the Superbook. So yeah, there are certain games I'm sure were universal that all the books needed. The Jets probably at the top of that list, but you never know what the different house players are doing at different books. We had a house player at the Superbook who bet Tampa Bay -3/-120 to win $70,000. Now that number actually moved quite a bit against him, but ended up being a big cover for him and a big loss for us. I doubt that other books around Nevada had really big decisions on the San Francisco Tampa Bay game.
Before we flip the page to next week, you had hinted last week that if the favorites covered in the first two games on Thanksgiving, there would be a lot of liability or a lot of lines in the book for people trying to spend their money and press on the night game with the Saints, who had obviously at that time been so hot and covered 8 straight games. What ended up happening there?
You know, what happened was we actually made out okay on Thursday because most of the people that were betting all those favorites weren't just betting those three games. They were betting parlays that ended up carrying to the weekend. So, like, we knew that we were going to end up paying for Thursday's games on Sunday, but our bottom line on Thursday was actually pretty positive.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that makes a ton of sense. It's just funny how – so parlays are still bet, right? Like, the people still get into them.
Yeah. That would be the understatement of the century.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't remember the last time I did one, but –
No, parlays are a huge part of the business. It's funny, the Thursday night game will very frequently be a winner for the house no matter what the result, because so many parlays are going to the Sunday games. It's like half the people are going to lose, right? And then the other half are just going to have their money carrying over till Sunday. So a lot of the times that game's a winner no matter what. And then conversely, a lot of times the Monday night game is a loser no matter what, because there's so many parlays coming to both sides of the Monday night game. That was the case for us last night.
And how'd you guys do on the Monday night game?
We did okay. It was a loss. We needed Tennessee. Tennessee would have been better for us than Houston, but it wasn't. It was quite a disparity between last night's game and the previous Monday's game, which was so heavily bet. Last night's game, there was really very little interest in.
Yeah, I'd heard highest of the year was last week's Chiefs-Rams. This was the lowest Monday night of the year.
Yeah, and well, I'm sure we'll talk about the Thursday game. I actually think that'll be the most heavily bet NFL game of the regular season to date, Dallas-New Orleans. But before we turn the page there, can we at least talk about the Browns-Bengals game?
Okay. I wasn't going to let you have a podcast without getting to discuss Hugh Jackson.
Well, it was great, man. You know, I've never, like when I was setting up my TVs on Sunday morning, I've never had an easier decision of what I put on my primary screen with sound. I had the Browns, the Bengals, Hugh Jackson, Jerome Boger was the ref. It was like my dream game. Plus, I'd given out the Browns on various media that I do, including giving it to Brent Musburger. I mean, really, all that game needed was like Gene Steratore to be the rules analyst and maybe Jay Peterman warming up on the sidelines to come into the game. That was definitely my favorite game of the year. And you know, as much as I make fun of Hugh Jackson, even I didn't think the Browns would turn it around this quickly. It's remarkable. They look like a whole new football team right now. And Baker Mayfield looks awesome. They've got playmakers all over the place. You know, Cleveland really is very impressive. I think that they will end up going over their various win total numbers. And I like them this week against Houston.
Man, a lot to digest. You haven't discussed the referees like you did last year on the podcast. Like you kind of took a hiatus from there. Now you're back with Boger.
Well, Gene Steratore was my favorite one because he always had this look on his face like he couldn't wait to say something funny and get all the attention on himself.
Yeah, like he had a joke. He had a joke he was just waiting to tell at the dinner table.
So, yeah, his retirement was a big blow for me, but I think now Boger has kind of ascended to Steratore's throne as the worst one. I don't think he understands like half the rules. And there's another guy I got my eye on, John Hussey. Every time I watch one of his games, I feel like he's calling a penalty every other play. So John Hussey is definitely one to watch moving forward.
We need a combine or something. You need a scouting report for all these guys.
Yeah, they're great, man. They're a big part of the game, man. They're always quick to make their presence known. The referees in the NFL.
That is for sure. So you got Hugh Jackson on the sideline, and there's an interception, and the guy picking it off runs over and hands it to him.
Yeah.
Is that a show of, like, respect, friendliness, like a little bit of a playful trash talk, or is there animosity there?
I think the animosity comes from the fact that he took a job with another team in their division, obviously trying to help them. Like, in theory, Hugh Jackson would have intel on the Browns. From what I can tell, he doesn't have any intel on the Browns, but I think that's what Cincinnati was thinking.
So we'll get to Baker Mayfield's comments, but I thought this was like friendly trash talk, that move.
You think? Okay. I mean, that's definitely possible.
And so the Mayfield comments, he did get fired. It's not like he left to go to the other, right? Like, there's
true.
And considering that Mayfield did the same thing with Texas Tech and Oklahoma.
Well, I don't know if I'd call that the same thing. I mean, he transferred schools. Hugh Jackson got fired from a multi-million dollar job and then switched over to a division rival within the same season. I guess there's some parallels, but I'd say there's a lot.
Well, the football team said, you're not good enough to be here, and so go wherever you want. And he went where he could get the best opportunity. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but I mean, he had to sit out a full season, I would imagine, at Oklahoma. And
he was trying to better himself after saying, we don't want you here. You're not good enough here.
Yeah.
That's all.
Texas Tech had some pretty good quarterbacks come through Lubbock while Cliff Kingsbury was there.
Right, and Cliff Kingsbury's no longer there. So we'll see if he surfaces in the NFL, given the direction that these NFL offenses are shifting. And what did you make of Sunday night and Monday night, fourth and ones, fourth and half a yard, inches in the Sunday night case? And last night they gave it to the fullback, who was a backup tight end. And I just love Mike McCarthy, who finally decides to go for it because maybe, just maybe, he's realizing
kicking is for losers.
But he does something so beyond stupid that it actually makes it even funnier than punting, because when it's fourth and like 2 inches, you have two guys on the nose guard, right? They're expecting a QB sneak. So what you probably should not do is give it to the guy deep in the backfield running to that same spot that everyone is anticipating. Maybe go a different spot.
I think the dumbest thing you can do on fourth down, other than punting, which is obviously the dumbest, but the second dumbest would be to call timeout, let all the defenders catch their breath, let them sub in the jumbo defensive package, and then just run right up the middle right into those guys. Like, the best thing you can do is what Brady's been doing for years, is just rushing up to the line, taking the snap, and just falling forward and getting the first down before the defense can get set.
Right, finding the crevice where the guy is not.
You don't want to do some slow developing play out of the backfield right into the center of the defense. That's probably the worst thing you can do, other than punt. Punt is the worst thing you can do. But the second worst thing you can do is the kind of slow developing play that you're talking about.
Well, and right to the one place they're fixated on.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you can go slow developing play anywhere else on the line. You should get the half yard or 2 inches in this case.
I like the naked bootleg. If you have the guts to call the naked bootleg and the quarterback executes it, it works every time.
The play I've never seen fail is the fake to like the dive and then just the pitch out to wide to the long side.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
I literally have never seen that work. It's impossible.
That's true.
It's just a sprint to the other sideline, and then depending on how fast the outside linebacker or corner is, the running back, who's presumably fast, can either just cut, depending on his leverage, and get a yard. It's not that hard. It is funny. You know, Al Michaels said, analytics guys, blah, blah. This isn't analytics. Analytics is so much more advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of just disrespectful to analytics to say, go for it on fourth and inches.
No,
that's not analytics.
I completely agree.
I joked that I tweeted that, like, I knew better than these guys before I'd gone through puberty playing video games. This is not stuff.
I never pretend to be some math analytics expert. I'm not, but I know that you should go for it on fourth and one at the 3 yard line, where your downside is the other team being backed up at their own 3 yard line. That's your downside. I mean, that you don't need a big spreadsheet in front of you to be able to do that kind of math.
Of course, last night there's a 97 yard touchdown run after the Titans get stuffed, but it's not like it came down to the difference of 4 points or 7 or whatever either. But you can take
nothing works every time. It's not like it's not like you're saying, okay, if you do this, it's going to work for you every time. It's just if you do this consistently in the long run, it's going to be better for you.
Yeah. Or how about run a more effective play? I mean, that's the other thing. It's not a binary situation. It's not make it or not don't make it. It's run the best play, much like, you know, clock management is, all that stuff is. There's so many different outcomes and permutations. You just have to be smart about it. And a lot of the best team, I mean, I was interacting with someone on Twitter about, are turnovers as random as some people want you to believe, right? We've had guys on the podcast that say they're random, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know if they, I mean, obviously they're not all random and they're not all, there are components of it that are random, like the bounce of a fumble.
Sure.
And tip.
Fumbles, I think, are largely random, but you have
badly coached teams who consistently have a negative, turnover differential. I don't think that's coincidence.
I agree. I mean, when you have Hugh Jackson calling the plays and DeShone Kizer as the quarterback, it's not a coincidence that there's a lot of interceptions.
But I think you teach, like you mentioned fumbles, I think the best coaches teach pursuing the football, blah, blah, blah. Like there was a game where the Patriots got like every loose fumble in an AFC championship game or something like that. I think there's an element of that, and they know how to coach protecting the football, all that stuff. The do your job mentality that Belichick instills. Now, I just think there's correlation to coaching on all this.
Yeah, I can't argue that there's definitely some correlation to the better coach teams and the better decision makers doing better in the turnover battle, and teams with younger, let's say less experienced quarterbacks are certainly going to be more prone to turn the football over.
All right, and after we both agree on that, we know Brady's throwing like five picks this week. So,
yeah,
all right,
of course.
Let's spin it forward to next week. You alluded to it a moment ago, but this Thursday night game, and it's another rare situation where I think the house will need the Dallas Cowboys at home on an island game.
Oh, they definitely will. Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, we've already seen some buyback on the Cowboys at +7.5. We went to +7.5, -120 on Dallas right now. The supposedly sharper players are certainly going to take Dallas in that spot at home, getting all those points. But the public, I mean, the Saints have treated the public very well, Doug. They're going to keep
straight
going to the Saints. I mean, there's no question.
But Dallas has covered three straight. They've covered the last four as an underdog. I mean, they've been rewarding bettors as well.
That's true. But the Saints are just, they're so explosive offensively. I definitely think, I think this is going to be a really, really heavily, I know this is going to be a really, really heavily bet game. The Saints are probably the most darling team to the public right now because they keep covering, and the Cowboys are the Cowboys. An island spot like this, I mean, this is going to be a monster game, handle-wise.
Yeah, I'm disappointed I didn't grab -7. I should have sensed that this was going to go up.
Yeah, I don't really see it going much higher than 7.5, though. In fact, I'd be surprised if it went much higher than that, just because the sharper players are so quick to buy back on Dallas in this spot. I don't think they're going to let the line get too much higher than this.
Really? You think they're going to be that willing to bet into the streak?
I do, and there's not going to be, like we always talk about, parlay liability to the primetime games later in the week. You're not going to see that in this game because it's the first game of the week. So you're not going to have as much of a chance to build up a huge liability on the Saints as you would if, let's say, this game was on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. Then you would see books panic and raise the line trying to write some money back.
So I imagine you'll have some leg one of some teasers here?
Yeah, I think that there will be a lot of Saints teasers if they do win by three being pushed to games on Sunday and Monday night.
Yeah, this is screams teaser as well.
Yeah, for sure. And Moneyline parlay, every which way they're going to come in on the Saints.
We go to Sunday and some intriguing games. Jacksonville has lost seven straight after falling in Orchard Park. Leonard Fournette suspended. Blake Bortles gets the hook. Worst thing that ever happened to the Jaguars was reaching the AFC title game a year ago. Bortles getting that money. And seven straight losses, not covering at all during them. So they're 0-5-2 to the number. And they're only four-point home dogs here with Cody Kessler as their quarterback against the Colts.
I'll tell you another thing, a very bad thing that happened to the Jacksonville franchise was the Indianapolis franchise hiring Frank Reich away from the Philadelphia Eagles. Colts are very dangerous right now. They've got Frank Reich, they've got Andrew Luck, and they've got over $100 million in cap space this offseason. Jacksonville is going to be looking up at the Colts for some time, I think.
It reminds me of a bet you and I made a long time ago.
Yes, I may recall something like that.
Not against one another.
No.
With on the same side against someone else.
Me and the guys back home, we refer to that as a hand holder when we jump in on the same side together or something.
I like that.
Yeah, so that was a very good hand holder we had many years ago, and I think you were the one who unearthed that gem.
I actually do not remember that. Did I? I thought you did.
I'm pretty sure it was you. I think you you tipped me off to that one. It was a great, great pick. It was a good call, man. And just look at the Colts franchise right now. I mean, a year ago there were some questions about Andrew Luck's shoulder, if he was ever going to be an elite player again. And they had Chuck Pagano, who was really one of the worst coaches in the NFL for several years. Now they've got this really bright offensive coach in Frank Reich. Luck looks like he's back to the Andrew Luck of old. They actually have an offensive line, which they've never had as long as Andrew Luck has been there. And they've got all that cap space. I mean, I think if you're an Indianapolis Colts fan, you've got to be feeling pretty good right now.
So the bet was, it was the year Peyton Manning was with the Colts, and he was like missing preseason games and had some neck issues. And there was, what was it, 30 to 1, 40 to 1?
I think it was 60 to 1, but it was like a dead heat thing. So it ended up being a 30 to 1 thing because them and the Rams finished with the same record.
Right, so it was 60 to 1 that they would have the worst record in the NFL. I mean, think about it. Going into the season, Colts were like awesome, right? They're over-under season wins are like 10.5, 11.5, whatever it is. And then we were kicking around the idea of like 60 to 1. What if Peyton's out? Like, what if he misses the whole season here? He hasn't played. Like, why are we so assuming that his neck thing's fine?
Yeah.
So we took a flyer at 60 to 1.
Well, they were 0-13, and then they foolishly won.
Right. So then the news comes.
15th game.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the news comes out. We're like, oh my god, we have 60-1 on this. Now Peyton Manning, this multiple MVP. Clearly, this team's built around him, and they have Jim Sorgi as their quarterback. So we're like, just 0-4, 0-5. We're loving life, keeping an eye on every other game involving a bad team. To your point, the Rams. And then the Jaguars were in the mix. And then they play a late-season game.
I think it was the Week 17 game, I believe, was Jacksonville-Indianapolis. And Jacksonville beat Indianapolis. And that was the only reason why the Colts ended up getting Andrew Luck, was because they lost that game.
But it was a 13-10 game in the fourth.
Yeah.
Or something insane. And I've referenced that game when discussing the Lakers and all these other NBA teams tanking over the last 4 years. I remember doing radio actually with Russillo about it, and I brought up this Jags I would have started a tight end at quarterback. I don't care. Give
sure
me a $200,000 fine. I don't care. Give
you
me Jim Sorgi,
sure
go
lose.
Power eye, 3 yards, cloud of dust, and punt. Like, I don't care. You throw the game as much as you can without getting it, kicked out of the league, essentially.
I think a really key component of that to remember too is that the number one pick is not always created equal. Everybody knew that Andrew Luck was going to be this superstar NFL quarterback and that he was going to be in the draft. It's like in the NBA, if you have the number one overall pick, the Anthony Davis year, well, that's really different than having it the Anthony Bennett year. The number one overall pick is not always created equal. When there's a stud franchise, no doubt, quarterback available, and you need to lose a game to have the first overall pick in the draft, you go out there and lose that game. You don't cost yourselves 15 years of Andrew Luck to win one meaningless regular season game.
Could not have said it better myself. That's the perfect example because of Anthony first names. Like, that's what we always say. Like, it's Anthony Davis or Anthony Bennett. And here, the suck for Luck was appropriate. You just got to do it. And look where these two franchises are now. They've tried to stick a square peg in a round hole with Blake Bortles. And I said it all along, they reached the playoffs last year. They were a couple plays away from going to the Super Bowl. You would think that team had 12, 13 wins. No, they had 10 wins in a division where their two biggest competitors were missing their quarterbacks for essentially the entire year, Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck. This was a fool's gold Jacksonville team because Bortles played okay at a couple times. And look, I don't blame them for thinking he could be good. Like, he was only 25 or whatever he was, and you never know. But the problem is they had a window of opportunity with that defense That's why they could ill afford it. So it was really frustrating to see them try to do all that instead of making a trade like last year. They could have gone out and got Jacoby Brissett. They could have got at the trade deadline last year. There's even Eli Manning rumors as well, and as much as that shocks Kai. But, you know, they should have done something like that. And now they're on the decline, and now they have a quarterback that they've overpaid and owe too much money, and that they've benched him.
And they've got rivals in their division that all appear to be going in the other direction, especially, you know, Houston's on an 8-game winning streak somehow. And Indianapolis looks like they're very much going in the positive direction. Tennessee is better than Jacksonville, too. So
yeah.
Jacksonville's in a lot of trouble right now. And it's crazy. It's hard to believe that this is a team that really should have made it to the Super Bowl last year. They escaped against a mediocre Buffalo team in the first round. Then they had that stunning
offense. It was like 10-9 final or something, right?
Yeah, I think it was 10-3. I mean, it was just terrible offensive football game. Both quarterbacks were awful in that game. But then the following week, Bortles played what will probably go down as the best game of his career, that win over Pittsburgh at Heinz Field. And then they were right there to beat New England and get to the Super Bowl. That seems like a very distant memory now.
Yeah, that playoffs, we're going to look back and it's just a giant anomaly. First, you had all the quarterback injuries that enabled some of these play. And then you have Nick Foles as a Super Bowl MVP. And we're going to look back and just look at, like, you know, Tyrod Taylor and the Bills in the postseason. Just a strange, strange playoffs that year that really gave, I said at the beginning of this season on this very podcast, saying teams have false hope after seeing Nick Foles, Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles go to the playoffs last year, and Foles win Super Bowl MVP. They think it's going to be system. They think it's going to be like, you still need an elite quarterback. I'm sorry. And that was just an outlier.
Buffalo has me very nervous. I should tell you guys that. I bet them under 6 wins. I was already spending the money, not just counting the money. And you know, all of a sudden I look up at the standings. They got 4 wins. And they've got a couple more winnable games down the stretch.
It's their division. That's the problem.
Their division sucks,
stinks.
But I think Sean McDermott deserves a lot of credit. I mean, certainly their division is very bad, but I think Sean McDermott, he got this team to the postseason last year, and they weren't much better last year, let's be honest. And he got them to the playoffs, and now he's winning games with this team, which I'm pretty sure was built to lose while they tried to develop a rookie quarterback. That coaching staff, I think, deserves a lot of credit.
I would agree. We talked about it a handful of weeks ago, maybe even a month and a half, two months ago, saying that when those odds offshore on teams that, you know, the coach most likely fired, like McDermott, had the lowest odds. It was like so stupid. There was no chance.
Ridiculous. I think I said at the time that in a head-to-head matchup, I would have made Hugh Jackson minus 5,000 to be fired before Sean McDermott. I was probably too light with that number. It probably should have been higher.
Yeah. What does the Superbook machine have that one as?
I mean, whoever came up with those odds, I don't know what they were. It's like they just looked at the standings and said, okay, the Bills have a bad record. They're going to fire their coach.
Right.
I mean, the guy was in the playoffs last season. I think he's done a terrific job this season. Fire Sean McDermott. That guy would get scooped up in 2 seconds if he got fired.
Could not agree with you more on that. He is that's one bright spot for Buffalo right now. Let's keep it moving here. So Carolina has let me down. I thought they'd be a good play last week against Seattle, laying -3. And look, Graham Gano missed some field goals. Carolina had their opportunities in the first half. They had a lot of yards, didn't convert it into that many points. Could have not put the game away, but at least created some separation. And they lose, which is not something they had done in a while. I believe they had won 8 straight home games. So they'd been doing really well at home, but get the L thanks to more magic, late game magic from Russell Wilson. And here they are on the road, only laying 3.5 to a Tampa Bay squad that maybe found some mojo.
Yeah, Tampa Bay looked, it's hard to believe that Tampa Bay's defense could ever hold an opponent to 9 points in an NFL game. I don't know how that happened. But, yeah, I mean, Carolina, that was a team we saw really sharp guys betting on them in the futures market before the season. You know, I don't think anybody thought New Orleans was going to be this good. But certainly Carolina has been a little disappointing, and they're going to be pretty much life or death to make the playoffs now that Seattle's got the tiebreaker over them.
Yeah, and that division, you know, that's just so tough because they're going to have other games. Now, Atlanta's not going to the playoffs, but, you know, that's a tough team to play at least. For that division. So, and they're at Tampa. I mean, obviously that's not a lock. They're only 3.5-point favorites. A game that, speaking of Atlanta, a game that interests me is because Lamar Jackson has not exactly looked lights out, but he's been effective, particularly as a runner. Now, that's because they've been at home and gotten to play the Bengals and the Raiders on back-to-back weeks. Now they have to go on the road and try to match offenses with Atlanta. This is a much tougher ask for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens.
I agree. And, you know, it's hard to get a really good read on Lamar Jackson because all he's done so far is played two home games against very bad teams. It's really hard to get a sense of how good or bad he is. I don't think we really know yet. I do trust that John Harbaugh will put him in situations to be successful. I think Harbaugh is that good of a coach. But we opened this game a little bit higher. I think we opened it Baltimore as a 3-point favorite on the road, and you've seen this number come down. Right now, Baltimore -1 at Atlanta. There's somebody out there that's been playing the Falcons, not necessarily in our book. But it makes sense because we don't know how good Lamar Jackson is. And Atlanta, 3 extra days to prepare for this game. They played on Thanksgiving. And the Falcons still have a lot of talent, and they really probably should have covered that New Orleans game. They've got a lot of explosive playmakers on offense.
You already mentioned that you like Cleveland. I kind of do, too, as well. We're starting to see attacks on Houston, given that they've won, 8 straight?
They've won 8 games in a row, and I think this line is +6 right now on the Browns. And I think that's a little high.
No respect for the Hugh Jackson factor.
Yeah, and the Browns are just a team that, like I said earlier, they're on an upward trajectory. They've got, you know, I think Nick Chubb looks like he's a stud. I love Njoku. I mean, some of their defensive players, Garrett, Ward, those guys are stud players. Mayfield looks like he's going to be a franchise quarterback, a guy that the Browns haven't had in forever. Their play calling is so much better now. What's the guy's name? Kitchens is the OC now. He's doing a really good job finding a real rhythm with Mayfield. I don't understand why the Browns are this big of a dog in this game. I know Houston's on a great winning streak, but a lot of their wins have been, I think, pretty lucky.
It was impressive last night, down 10-0 to come back and finish them off. Look,
nothing lucky about last night's win. Oh, absolutely, you're absolutely right. That was a good solid win, and their pass rush looked awesome. Mariota looked like he was going to be knocked out of that game at certain points.
Yeah, Houston's legit, but that line does seem a little bit high. Your Buffalo Bills needing a loss for you.
Ooh.
On the road, Miami, Ryan Tannehill's back. I did not know that, so I botched my fantasy lineup, did not play Kenyon Drake. Don't get me started. I'm tied for last place. I've lost so many games matchups I should have won with the right roster.
One of the best decisions I've made in the last few years is I don't play fantasy football anymore, and it feels so good. I don't have to worry about any of that stuff at all. And people ask me about like fantasy football advice. I'm like, dude, I don't even play fantasy football. Talk to anybody else but me. I don't know anything about it.
That's a lot of us out there who do play. Buffalo, Miami, Miami 5.5. I mean, this is kind of like a random game. Obviously, Bills, dare I say, a flat spot for Buffalo off the big win over Jacksonville?
Yeah, it could be. And, you know, Miami is still, I think, they have an outside chance at a playoff berth. But I could see this game going either way. I wouldn't really get involved in this game personally, and I think this will be possibly the least bet game of the week. It's going to be buried in the deck at 10 a.m. local time out here, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of money on that game.
Next game, I'm seeing it off the board for now because true broski is now official word for the Bears at the Giants.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's a big difference between Trubisky and Chase Daniel right now. Maybe a half a point to a point, but we're gonna wait and see what happens there with the quarterback status. Kai, I'm nervous for Eli Manning going up against that Chicago pass rush, man.
Yeah,
that looks like a very bad matchup for Mr. Manning.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, man. I'm legit nervous for his livelihood.
Yeah, it could be a long day with Khalil Mack and the boys getting after him in the backfield there. It's hard to picture New York moving the football against that Chicago defense.
Kai, how did you feel? Were you a Jersey establishment?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Cheering on you're looking pretty good early, huh?
It was looking great early on. It was a good game overall because, you know, it was close, but you know, Giants did what the Giants do, especially at the link.
I sense disappointment in that, whereas it should be elation. You should want the draft pick.
They don't want to go 6-10, Kai.
Right, no. To be honest,
that doesn't get you anywhere.
I'm totally indifferent about it at this point because it's like whatever they're supposed to do, they do the opposite. So it's just like I had a good time with my boys, you know, watching the game. It had less to do with the Giants than that.
Kai, any of your boys like to fire on games?
You know, they're getting a lot more interested, especially because of the podcast. You know, this is the way that fantasy kind of took over a couple years back has really taken over in the mainstream.
So they're
good
not
news, man.
They're not
good to hear that.
They're not regular bettors.
Right.
To be, you know, like you didn't grow up with guys who had Pick'em pools or anything.
No, I didn't, yeah.
But now they're, you know, I'm running into more people today. One of your fellow producers said, I might need your, who you got on Saturday? I gotta come back. I'm down a little bit these days.
It's awesome, man. And I mean, especially like, you know, some of the news that I know we can't say right now that Murray told us about that's going on in New Jersey. It's like, it's gonna make it a lot more interesting.
For sure. I got coffee with my brother who is with his family in Philadelphia for the holiday. He was driving back up to Boston. We were able to coordinate, and I got coffee and, you know, lunch with him yesterday, and was just talking about work and life and whatever. He's like, yeah, I got a couple texts from buddies who are like, I got to get your brother's picks. He's doing well in SportsCenter.
Nice.
He just laughed. Yeah, this is kind of fun. Well, it's more just the growing presence, yeah. And you talked about it, Kai, as well, just that now it's becoming more and more mainstream.
Maybe I hung around with a bad crowd because all my friends were into gambling the whole time. So I don't know if I just picked some seedy gentlemen to be friends with all these years.
No, come on, no. Murray. It's not seedy. We don't have degenerate friends. We just have people who have different appetites for entertainment.
Right. Okay, fair enough. That makes me feel
right.
Better.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, all my buddies, we know the advantages of teasers in high school. And I've written about it. Our good friend Zeke has been mentioned in the column many times. Okay, so Denver, big win, which that just stunk. That line was just reeking, and every square was on the Steelers, right, I imagine?
That was a big-time sharp versus square showdown there where we saw sharp money show up on Denver early in the week, +4.5, +4, +3.5. And, yeah, absolutely, the squares came heavily on the Steelers, as you would imagine. That was a game that really saved us. That day really could have been a lot worse if we hadn't got the Denver outright win. And, you know, Denver, I've been critical of Vance Joseph earlier in the season, and I still don't really think much of the guy. But talk about two good back-to-back wins. They won at the Chargers, and then they beat the Steelers. And their schedule is pretty soft down the stretch here, and they're a team that could theoretically sneak in as that number six seed in the AFC playoffs.
Hold on. Let's pump the brakes. If Phillip Rivers doesn't spike the ball on a third down screen,
yeah, that's true.
The Broncos don't come back and win. And last week, Xavier Grimble fumbles on the half yard line, and the fumble goes into the end zone for a touchback. That was a big
absolutely.
Hit. Give the defender credit, but come on, like this was not. I mean, that's football. I get it, but
you're right. But I've been saying that about Houston for like 2 months now, and I mean it. Like, of course you're right. Denver could have lost both of those games, but the fact
should
is
have lost the Chargers game. Let's face it, that game was
over. They should have, but they did win them both, and their schedule does get a lot easier down the stretch. They've already played both games against Kansas City. They've got some easier opponents in December. I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying that they could be a team. Theoretically, that could get into the playoffs as the number six seed, possibly.
All right. Well, they're laying 4.5 at Cincinnati, and obviously Jeff Driscoll, the quarterback for the Bengals, who may be even better than Andy Dalton, for all we know.
I don't think that there's because I watched that Cleveland-Cincinnati game because I love Cleveland, and there didn't appear to be any difference at all when Driscoll went in for Dalton, and I don't think that has much of a bearing on the point spread.
All right, a couple beefy point spreads coming up here. Three straight double digits. Let's start with the Rams at Detroit off the bye week. No travel to Mexico City. And they, you know, remember the game was home. So they're off the bye week, and now they're going to Detroit and also extended rest for the Lions. And we talked about that game earlier. Let's not forget Stafford interception in the end zone. Maybe the Lions go for two, or maybe they cover in overtime with a Bears field goal. Who knows? So that's another reason, another way the Bears were able to cover that game. So here it's a 10-point road team with as the favorite.
Yeah, and we've seen the Rams a lot this year not cover these big point spreads on the road. I think that they had a stretch of like 3 weeks in a row where they were a big road favorite. I'm not sure that they covered any of those games. I know one of them was against Seattle. Maybe one was against Denver. I'm not sure if I remember that exactly right.
So they've covered three of their last four road games. The one they did cover was the Niners. They did cover and win big in San Francisco. But you're right, at Seattle, at Denver, no cover, and then at New Orleans losing outright.
Yeah, we've seen them not cover these big spreads, but manage to win these games. I know they also had a win against Green Bay, where they didn't cover as a pretty big favorite. That was a home game, but the Rams have not been great at getting the money for the public as a big favorite the way that the Saints have been all season. This line does seem a little bit high to me, but Detroit off that Thanksgiving loss, not that they had much to play for then, but they've got nothing to play for now. And the Rams need to keep winning to have any chance at that number one seed in the NFC playoffs.
Right. They do not have the head-to-head, obviously, advantage with New Orleans having lost at the Saints. So they're laying 10 flat at some books. And this one's a beefy one as well. Green Bay off the Sunday night loss, laying full two touchdowns at home to Arizona.
Yeah, and you know, Arizona jumped out 10-0 on the Chargers on Sunday, and I think the final score was 45-10. You want to talk about a coach that's in over his head? I think the Arizona guy Wilkes is—he's in over his head. Let's say that.
Are you going to get a big handle on Green Bay, given that they've lost? Because you've talked about it. You've said that as much as fans have allegiance to their favorite teams, they have allegiance to their wallet more. That's a great line. And Green Bay has not rewarded fans of late.
I don't see it being a big bet game because it's at 10 a.m. and because Green Bay is such a big favorite. The public generally doesn't love laying these huge numbers. There's a lot of other games to choose from at 10 a.m. I do think the public will mostly bet Green Bay, but I don't expect it to be a particularly high-handled game this week.
Another big spread, this one even a little higher, and on the road, Kansas City laying 15 at the Black Hole. Raiders got the surprise cover at Arizona and then go back to their losing ways against the spread. Do not cover against Baltimore. They have the worst record against the spread this season. Do the Oakland Raiders at 3-8 against the number.
And this will be a high handle game because this game is in the afternoon where there's less to choose from. So you know the public
doesn't like to lay the big wood.
They don't, but there's only three games in the afternoon or four games, so I think there will be much more handle on this game than the Green Bay game at 10 a.m. where there's more to choose from.
Gotcha.
You're right. They don't love laying 15 points, but just because there's less to choose from in the afternoon, I think you'll see a lot more money on the Chiefs than you will on the Packers.
High total, 55.5.
Yeah, that Kansas City offense is pretty potent.
I don't know if you have to catch
those guys.
I have been able to catch them. But, lethargic effort against Arizona. Could be another game like that. They do what they need to do, Kansas City. They will light you up if they have to.
And they're a team that I think is really going to end up getting, I don't want to say screwed, but I think that they're going to end up not getting the number one seed in the AFC because New England's schedule and their division is so much easier than Kansas City's. I think Kansas City is the best team in the AFC, but I think that they'll end up having to play at New England. You know, New England, as great as they are, as great as Belichick and Brady are, they benefited so much in this whole run over how bad the other teams in the AFC East are. And I think we're going to see that again this year. I think the weakness of the AFC East is going to propel the Patriots to that top seed. And we had a group that I do consider pretty sharp come in this morning and actually made some big future bets on the Patriots.
Interesting, because the Steelers' loss obviously is big for that three-headed race, if you will, amongst those three teams for that AFC. And the Patriots may not realize, even during all this Brady Belichick success, they've never made the Super Bowl without being the one or the two seed, without having a first-round bye. Now, that also leads to a home game in the second round, right? But
that's also probably because they always have a first-round bye.
Right. Well, there's times where, remember they played the Ravens? And Ray Rice had like an 88-yard run.
Yeah, that was a wild card game.
Right, it was a wild card game. Yeah, it was round two, so they limped to the playoffs. And look, it makes sense. Gee, they're not one of the best teams in the regular season of the AFC. They don't go to the Super Bowl. But you're right. Like, they've had – now, that doesn't mean every time they are a one or two seed they go, but they've never done it the other way. They've never reached it without being a one or two seed.
It is amazing that, like, you could almost pencil in the AFC championship game being in Foxborough every year. It just seems like that's an annual AFC championship games in New England every season.
Well, who's been the best quarterback in their division over the last 10, 15 years? Is it Mark Sanchez?
I, is, I, is it? It can't be Sanchez, can it?
I mean, that's Ryan Tannehill.
Is it Ryan Tannehill? I don't know. It's somebody that's not good.
JP Lossman. I mean, look who they've had to deal with, right?
Yeah, you can't tell me that as great as they are, you cannot tell me that it doesn't benefit them a lot while you've got the Steelers dealing with Baltimore and then some decent Cincinnati teams over the years and then the AFC West teams beating each other up. The Patriots, just they play the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins twice each, and it gives them a huge advantage when we talk about AFC playoff seeding, and I think we're going to see that again this year.
I still can't believe this team got waxed by Blake Bortles in Jacksonville this year, but that's neither here nor there. So let's move forward. Jets, Tennessee, do we have to discuss this game at all? Titans laying 9?
No, we already made fun of Todd Bowles and the Jets play calling at the goal line. I think that was all we needed to get out of our systems there. I don't have anything else to add.
Marquee game in Foxborough, Vikings at the Patriots. This is nice. This is a nice game.
It's a very good afternoon game. Will be probably the most heavily bet of the Sunday games, other than Sunday Night Football, of course. We need the Patriots here. We have a house player that made. We had a house player that made a very large bet on the Vikings to make the playoffs.
That's right. You've discussed that.
And the Vikings are right on kind of that cut line where they're, I think after Sunday night's game, they're certainly more than 50%. But they've got a tough schedule down the stretch. They've got a crucial game against Seattle coming up next month. And they've got this game, obviously, at New England. We want to see the Patriots win this game and hurt Minnesota's chances of getting into the postseason.
You know what this game's going to tell us a lot about? Kirk Cousins. He doesn't have to win the game because I don't like win-loss records. We've talked about it a bunch. But like he has to win. He has to play well. He has to not get fooled by a Belichick scheme and not just do stupid. Like I loved what Collinsworth was saying about his play, especially early in the first quarter, how he seemed unsettled, maybe nervous, I believe, was the word Collinsworth used, if I remember correctly. I think this guy needs to go just play like he should and play like his contract would suggest.
Yeah, I was at a bar last night watching the game, and the question came up, who's the most overrated quarterback in the NFL? And I said, I think it's Kirk Cousins. I don't think that there's much there. And I think he's just an average quarterback. I think he's extremely overpaid. But you're absolutely right. He could silence a lot of critics, including myself, if he can go into New England and win this game and help secure a playoff position for Minnesota. But, you know, it's not like he's been any better than Case Keenum was last year for the Vikings.
Well, I said that on the podcast. I said, you're getting a better quarterback, but you're not going to get a better play from a quarterback because Keenum was just incredible last year. So, yeah, he's more talented, but nobody could have played better for Minnesota last year. Like, no one. Like, he was just insanely good.
And Kirk's old team, the Redskins, they're not, and I'm not saying they're getting good quarterback play, but they're basically the same team they were last year with him. I mean, they're a team that's going to finish just on the outside of the playoff picture in the NFC. Pretty much the same thing.
You want to know the answer to my answer to that question?
Please.
It all depends on how you rate him. But my perception of the rating, Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford's name came up, actually. I can't disagree.
I've been
saying
it for 10 years. There's a Lions fan who works here, a friend of mine. And we were getting into it once, and I was saying that Flacco's better than Stafford. He thought I was crazy. This was the year that Flacco ended up going on, have that insane postseason, and win the Super Bowl.
That was good timing for that argument.
It's lightning in a bottle. I'm just saying,
right,
like, Stafford has all, like, looks well-liked by his teammates and the community, all that good stuff, has incredible arm talent.
Yes.
But I'm, like, bummed as a football fan. Just imagine if he had, like, Andy Reid's coaching in a system like that. Like, he's never had the right coaches around him, but he's just never made good decisions. I mean, we saw that. By the way, I was texting with him during the game on Thursday, and then mid third quarter, we stopped, and then like later he threw that pick six. I did not follow up with the text. I let it go. It was Thanksgiving.
We talk all the time about this, about quarterbacks being put in good systems, and I think Drew Brees is one of the great players of all time. But you can't tell me he hasn't benefited hugely from the fact that he got paired up with Sean Payton all those years ago. It's such a being in the right system is huge for a quarterback, maybe more than any other position in sports. That's why I've always been a big defender of Philip Rivers, because I think he has played for dumb coaches just all the way through his career, and he's managed to be very successful at least as an individual player in spite of all that.
Yeah, he's been successful. I think their issues have been like mistakes and defense. Like he's made some big turnovers too, but. I think he's fairly evaluated. I mean, look, he's even getting thrown around in the MVP conversation this year. He had some big playoff moments against the Patriots a while ago. I think he's like he's considered a Hall of Famer. Like, I think he's fairly evaluated.
He better be in the Hall of Fame. But I look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is a very special case where all the ability is there, the arm strength is there, the athleticism is there. He's got the head for the position, and he's being paired with a good play caller and a bunch of offensive skill, really good offensive skill position players. Very unusual for the whole thing to come together like that, especially for a guy as young as him.
Yeah, from the start, right, having the right coach.
And we're seeing the results of that. Obviously, he's having a tremendous season.
Another double-digit line, Seattle laying 10 to San Francisco. The Seahawks team in the playoff discussion.
Yeah, they are, and Pete Carroll, again, he's done a terrific job. Russell Wilson should be considered for the MVP. I don't know that any one player means more to his team than Russell Wilson does. It's him or Aaron Rodgers in my book, or Drew Brees. But, you know, Wilson is just a guy that he's doing it all for that Seattle team. He's been awesome this year.
And a game that was flexed, and for good reason, Sunday night, Chargers at the Steelers. You got the hook here, back-to-back Sunday nights. The home team's not three, not four, it's 3.5. Yeah. Pittsburgh laying it at Heinz Field.
Yeah, it should be certainly a very heavily bet game. I think we'll see money both ways. We'll likely end up needing the Chargers, but the Steelers are coming in off of a really bad loss, and the Chargers are coming in off of a blowout victory. So I do expect to see certainly some public support for the Chargers as well. Should be a pretty split game.
I'm smelling some bonanza on this game.
Really?
Just I'm looking forward to that one.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Monday night football. Oh, yeah. Kai on the control. 6.5, the Eagles with your Washington Redskins and maybe a Colt McCoy who's going to throw over 1.5 touchdowns and interceptions combined.
Yeah, and the Eagles really saved their season by edging out Kai's Giants on Sunday. You know, their season would have pretty much been over if they'd lost that game and fallen to 4-7. They clearly miss Frank Reich. I think that's pretty obvious. You look at what's going on in Indianapolis with their offense. Look at the Eagles' offense this season. You know, Ed Sammons is from New Jersey. He's a big Eagles fan. He told me he was listening to Philadelphia Talk Radio the other day. The fans were calling in asking for Doug Peterson's head.
Ooh.
9 months after he won the first Super Bowl in franchise history.
Not surprising for Philadelphia.
That's a tough fan base, guys. I think that is ridiculous, but certainly the Eagles are one of the most disappointing teams in the league right there with Jacksonville. But they're back on track after that Giants win, and if they can beat the Redskins Monday night, they'll put some pressure on Dallas in the NFC East.
I mean, look at this division. Cowboys and Redskins tied for first place at 6-5. Cowboys are the betting favorite right now for the NFC East. But then Dallas also has to play the Saints this week. And the Eagles are right there at 5-6. This is how many wins do you think wins the division?
Probably 9. I mean, I don't have the schedules in front of me, but I can't imagine that. I mean, Dallas, the Redskins have no chance of winning 4 more games. I'd have to look at Dallas' schedule. I guess they could theoretically go 10-6, but I'd say 9-7 will probably get it done.
Of the 5 remaining games, if you can just win 3 for the Cowboys or Redskins, you'll win the division.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I would think so. I don't think Philadelphia is what, 5-6. I don't see them. They're not going to win out and finish 10-6.
Does Washington have enough to go in there and cover this game?
I think that they do. Like I said, I don't think there's a huge disparity between Smith and McCoy. The Redskins had a lot of chances to cover that game on Thanksgiving. I think there was a very questionable helmet-to-helmet non-call on Jordan Reed at the end of the game.
It was insane.
I mean, the refs completely missed that call. And if they had gotten that call, Washington likely would have covered the spread. It's not as if Dallas just, you know, convincingly beat the Redskins on Thursday.
And the Dak Prescott scramble didn't help either.
Yeah, and didn't they have a missed extra point that looked like it went right over the goalpost and probably should have been counted as good? There's got to be a better way to do the kicking than having two old guys looking up into the lights of the stadium and deciding if the ball went through the post or not. I mean, there has to be a better way to do this, guys.
It's an Adam Carolla special.
I know.
He's been complaining about it for years. Yeah, just throw some piping up there. Like, it's so stupid.
there's got to be something we could do. I mean, tennis has a great system where you can clearly see if the ball is in or out every time, and no one can argue it. The NFL can't get their act together and figure something out. It's ridiculous.
Oh, boy. All right. We got to get into the baby bankroll bonanza. Should be good coming off the monster week, especially for yours truly. We'll do that momentarily with John. But first, a message from one of our sponsors. Holidays are near, gentlemen. Treat yourself or a loved one to a brand new suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Indochino is North America's leading made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining, pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally, or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Just watch as the compliments roll in. November is Black Friday season, meaning 2018's lowest prices, up to 70% off everything. The theme is all about stepping out from backstage, make an entrance, take center stage, your biggest moment, grand finale, etc. This week, listeners can take advantage of Black Friday pricing by using the code BEHINDTHEBETS at checkout. That's 70% off the regular price for a made-to-measure suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BEHINDTHEBETS for up to 70% off. Incredible deal for a made-to-measure suit.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Last week was very great illustration of what I've always said. You got to be comfortable with losing. You're not going to win every week because you can't be shy to fire when ready. And it was a nice comeback.
Yeah, no, you had a big week. I had the Brownies, and that was a good pick at +3. That game closed. I think some books closed Cleveland as a favorite in that game.
Wow.
And then I had the Prince of Props delivered me a dime winner on the McCoy play that we already talked about. So no complaints here, but I know you had a tremendous week.
Yeah, no, I had the 3K wager on Buffalo, and I did lose. Good. I did lose Washington +7.5 thanks to that stupid no call and everything else that went wrong in that game. So I lost 12. So net 1,800 on the picks from the pod. And then I teased and said I was going to hammer the Vikings. I was hoping that line would come down from 3.5 to 3. I had to settle for 3.5. And really no chance to lay off that number the entire game, thanks to missed field goals and a no-call at the end of the first half on the roughing the kicker. Just bizarre. I was with Mike Zimmer. I was frustrated, too. But then you got the lead late, and I got played out of it. I played so it was a 5K and then played out of it 3K. This is all on Twitter. At +7.5, and Aaron Rodgers, 3rd-and-1 incomplete. No, excuse me, 2nd-and-1 incomplete, 3rd-and-1 to the end zone just a little long. And yeah. The Packers down 2 scores, 4th down. You had to take the 3 points. And there I'm sitting in the middle, and I stick the middle.
Yeah, and it's shocking that Rodgers missed that throw. I think that was Davante Adams. And, yeah, you would expect Aaron Rodgers to hit that throw. But certainly
he was rushed. He had pressure, I believe.
Yeah, no, I know, but I hold Aaron Rodgers up so high. I was surprised he missed it, but thank God he did for the book. That was a huge swing for us at the Superbook, and I know it was very big for you as well for the Bonanza. So no complaints for me either on that one.
So +9,800 for me. Yeah,
ooh, that was
nearly two bricks I got there.
That's that's pretty good, man. I know we got a lot of time left now, though, and I got the Prince in my corner now.
Yeah, you're getting some assistance there.
Yeah, I got a very talented young man helping me out there. So,
would you think you're getting more assistance than George got from Elaine on the IQ test?
yeah, it's a very similar situation where he meets me at the window and just hands me the picks to give out.
Right.
yeah. It's a very, well, now, he gave me a couple losers to start the year.
All right.
But he's been doing, he's on a two-game winning streak, and I like that McCoy pick a lot. We'll see. Whatever he comes up with this week, I'll be sure to tweet it out. So stay tuned. Probably closer to the weekend, maybe Friday or Saturday, I'll tweet that play out.
Okay, and full disclosure, when I got that tweet, I was like, you know, that's pretty good. And I scoured websites for that one. Could not find the exact one. I saw over-unders for TDs. I saw over-unders for interceptions, but nothing combined. Now, that was an official Superbook prop, so it's fair game, but it's unfortunate that it wasn't a common prop elsewhere.
Yeah, we had a big group of guys out at this bar in Old Town on Wednesday night, and we landed on that play, and we were showing it to some of the other guys, and everybody was like, yeah, that's awesome, that's awesome. Then we showed it to one of our buddies, and he threw cold water on it. He's like, nah, it's stupid. And we were defiant. And that right then is when I tweeted it out and shoved it in that guy's face. So,
how dare he? How dare he question Mr. Director?
I know. Just a sourpuss, just throwing cold water on the guys, and they're just out trying to have some good time and pick winners for the public.
Yeah. Well, he didn't get to. He didn't get that. Hold on. Stuffing for his wallet.
No, he did not. I'd like to think that he faded the play somehow. I'd like to think that he lost. In addition to being wrong.
All right, Murray, I finally get the tee box back after the big week. It's good. I was getting a little worried there, man. I was sick of sitting in the cart and watching you load up. But I don't love a lot of plays, at least here as we tape this on a Tuesday. But I am going to fire pretty hard. I'm going to go two dimes on the over Steelers and Chargers. I think both coaches realize
kicking is for losers
and we'll need to score touchdowns, and both quarterbacks will be dominant. And I think 51.5 is low. So I'll go two dimes on the over.
Okay. I like the audio clip there too. It's very true. I don't know if Anthony Lynn has quite figured out that kicking is for losers, but I know that Mike Tomlin knows. So you should be good at least on half the game,
especially on extra points. Yeah.
Yeah. I like Mike. I'm a Mike Tomlin guy. You know, it's still pretty early in the week here, Tuesday morning. I think I'll probably add some more plays as we get closer to Sunday, obviously the Prince of Props play, but I'll do some other stuff. But for today, all I'm going to do is I'll take my Brownies plus six for a nickel. They're on the road at Houston. They keep coming through for me. I'm going to stick with my boys there, the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, they've covered back-to-back games, good momentum. They really had a good shot to cover Kansas City, but got a little frisky with the two-point conversion attempts Greg Williams did his first game as the Browns head coach. So I think order's restored there at the dog pound, although this one is on the road. You know,
and Greg Williams already won more games than Hugh did his first 2 years in Cleveland. Greg's up to two wins.
And they snapped a road losing streak, too. It's just remarkable.
Yeah, I think 25 consecutive road games, and they were up, I want to say, 28-0 on Sunday. And I've given Mr. Musburger the Browns each of their last two games against Atlanta and then this past week against Cincinnati. So the Browns are just coming through for me. You know, if you pick the same team every week for like 50 consecutive weeks, eventually you're going to win some picks.
In theory.
Right, of course.
All right, I'm going to make a play on the Miami Dolphins. You said it's not going to be the maybe the lowest bet game on Sunday. I'm going to make it one of the bigger bet games for the Bonanza.
Okay.
I will go two dimes as well. On Miami. Well, you know what? I'm going to make it 5K. I'm going to put a brick on Miami because I think we're going to go for a middle shot here.
Will not have in-progress wagering on that game at the Superbook.
Well,
I can tell you that.
But we've thought outside the box, right? Like I can play.
Right.
I can pick off number elsewhere.
I'm fine with that.
All right, good. So I'm going to do Miami minus 5.5. I feel like I can sneak a middle in here. So I'll do 5.5 for 5K, new to the program on the brick term.
Okay, be careful. Those Bills are frisky. The Bills got me nervous.
I know. I was all over them last week.
They're very well coached. Josh Allen has a long way to go, but he's much more competent than the other quarterbacks they've been playing. And I see some things to like with Josh Allen, but he certainly has a long way to go.
All right, so do you have another play, or are we tabling this?
No, that's it for me
too.
But I will be adding as we get closer to Sunday.
All right, so and I'll get the final tallies. I got to go through my notes, but we know about how we each did. I think last week we were separated only by like a few $100. So we'll go from there. All right. Murray, as always, we appreciate especially the adjustment of the schedule this week. Fun as always, and we'll see how we do. And stay tuned on Twitter, especially for the Prince of Props.
He's coming. And hopefully we'll have a few more winners. It was good for us to both have a big winning weekend.
Yes.
That felt very nice. It only took us 12 weeks to do that, but we did it. That's the bottom line.
We did it, and we're going to keep doing it. All right, bud, have a good week. And we'll talk to you tomorrow on the College Pod.
Sounds good.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Plenty of picks ahead on Twitter. Kai, you like that? We're teasing ahead for Twitter, just given it's Tuesday. Stuff to discuss with, or stuff to wait out, at least with injuries with Trubisky. And, you know, it's just hard to formulate all your plays on a Tuesday for Sunday games.
I don't like that. I love that.
You love it. All right. So Prince of Props will have a play courtesy of Mr. Director, who continues to give Mr. Musburger W's. And I will have some plays as well, though I'm certainly taking that big position on the Dolphins and trying to press with my winnings from the middle last Sunday night. So thanks to John Murray. Coming up, Andrew Feldman, my colleague, my boss on poker. And we have a podcast out right now, 30 for 30 podcast, that reflects back on a pivotal moment in the evolution of poker becoming mainstream, the 2003 World Series main event, Chris Moneymaker taking everyone down. So that's coming up straight ahead, but it's really interesting stuff. So stay with us, and we'll be back with Andrew Feldman in a moment. Let's now bring in essentially my boss, the senior editor for ESPN.com section of that covers combat sports and chalk, Andrew Feldman, on here to talk also poker.
You know, as your boss, I should probably tell you that your whole thought process right now is probably not a good idea. Let's be serious and bring on someone that actually has some expertise in this matter, maybe.
Well, you do have expertise, and that's what I want to talk about, because prior to all this, prior to becoming a suit, you were...
Wow.
I was waiting for
that. I got a suit drop?
Yeah.
Man.
Look, you were oversaw like all the poker content, basically, and this was back when it was in its boom, the 2004, 2005 era, and you used to host a podcast in these very rooms. In this room,
This
is the room.
It was me, Phil Gordon. I spoke to him a little while ago. He's still around. And Sean Wyman, who is now a talent producer.
Yes.
A talent, whatever he is here.
Yeah, he's part of the
talking about
talent
a suit,
team.
Sean Wyman?
Yeah.
Yeah, suit.
So you guys, okay, so take me through the timeline, because I want to hear, there's a podcast right now, the 30 for 30 podcast, dove into Chris Moneymaker's World Series of Poker main event title in 2003, and sort of the boom that was, and especially a sort of a random winning, and he'd taken down all these big names, including Phil Ivey and some others. And it was just a fascinating podcast. You got to go listen to all these people listening right now. But take me back to ESPN going into this poker space when it was taking off.
So, I mean, we'll start from the basic. Nobody thought this was going to work. Let's be serious. Poker on TV, who's going to watch this?
Right.
And even as someone who followed the game for, you know, over a decade, I don't know. I think what really got ESPN into it was the whole card cameras and was the fact that they were able to tell these stories they were never able to tell before about gambling and about how interesting the players actually were and the thought process behind them. We went from, you know, watching people guessing what everybody had to actually seeing what they had and kind of taking the strategy behind it. And as soon as you saw that first big bluff, you were kind of hooked because you just loved it. You're like, wow, that guy's really going to fall for it.
That's what the podcast talks about, how the producer sort of had two big things. Create an emotional connection, essentially, with the players, right? Give me their backstory, their bio blast. And that's normal for a lot of sports,
which,
right?
By the way, is what we're trying to do with gambling right now, if you think about it, Doug Kazarian.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I don't know if we're trying to create a talent who is known to the masses for his expertise and his background.
I think it's more – a better parallel would be just in sports in general, how there's such a human element to this where they take – you know, you learn more about the player, right? And then obviously we have Twitter and social media and everything.
But here's the entertainment part with all this. You have poker players who, A, don't talk to other people because you sit at a table and you try to take everybody else's money.
And you don't want to show any tells.
Right.
Or
you want to show no emotion. You want to show no enthusiasm for what's going on. And now all of a sudden you have a TV crew in your face trying to get a story out of you. And from that moment on, Matt Morantz and the 441 team were so good at what they did to find these stories. And then when all of the stories they had going into the main event got busted, which is never really the case, they had to pivot. And somehow this guy named Chris Moneymaker shows up.
And that's the beauty of this. You mentioned the lipstick cameras in the tables and the felt and everything like that to just show the whole cards for the poker hands. And that engages the viewer, gets them sort of playing, simulating behind. You know, we do this as football fans, right? We're like, oh, what would you do 3rd and 1? What play would you call? That's basically what they were doing. And then they post-broadcasted everything. They didn't have any play-by-play at the time. They had all this footage, and then they did the play-by-play for later broadcast date.
Right. Lon and Normer were always on site, and they still are, but they don't do anything. They walk around. They talk to the players. They might take a note here or there. But literally, for those 2 weeks during the main event, they're just hanging out.
Broadcasting's probably a little easier that way.
Yeah, it's good when you when you're able to kind of talk about what has happened by knowing what has happened.
But on the production side of things, which you just alluded to a moment ago, that's what was so awesome. And the podcast is great. You guys got to check it out, 30 for 30. And it just takes us through the concern, the scare, the fear that the production team had when these big names started falling off, right?
You want that fear, though? I had that fear every single year covering this thing.
Why? Because you had to dig deeper to find a better story, so to speak, without the big name?
Not to say I was lazy or anything, but you had to work.
Yeah.
And it was interesting in the poker world because you had, you know, even move forward to 2006 and beyond, you had out of the, you know, 7,000 players, you probably knew 150. So the odds of getting someone you know and a story that you know and a story that you could tell and a story that can engage the fans by saying, this is a guy you know about, he's going to make a difference. The odds are so limited.
Right.
So you had to really find these stories. And then every single day, you know, 72 players, 27 players, 9 players. Who's left? What do we know about them? And it was a frantic pace to kind of talk to all these guys.
And it's so different. Like in the NBA finals, you know LeBron's going to take the last shot, or at least you did before he went to the Western Conference. May not reach there. But you just know the certain guys. Let's go to the NCAA tournament. It's easy. If there's a, you know, 16 seed that beats a 1 seed, you have enough. There's only a small amount of roster. You're talking thousands here. Right. And
even with the 16 seed, you have a media guide.
Right.
You have something. You literally, in poker, you have a guy wearing a hat and sunglasses next to a guy wearing a hat and sunglasses.
And so you have this guy coming out of nowhere taking down Phil Ivey and Chan as well, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of those was a really lucky hand that they talk about in the podcast. He had a 1-in-6 chance because he didn't know. Was it Phil Ivey had pocket nines, I think?
It was Ivey, yeah.
Yeah, had the pocket nines. And he's sitting there with a good hand, but he didn't realize it was a full house he was going against at the time, and then he ended up pulling the card.
The question is, if Phil Ivey wins that hand, where are we?
What would have changed, do you think? So Phil Ivey, let's say Phil Ivey wins the 2003 World Series of Poker main event. Why is it different after that?
Just start with the moneymaker.
Correct. We don't know about Moneymaker.
Right. And so you basically have this unknown, this story, which is the driving force to every amateur player to say, hey, I could do this. If he doesn't win and you see the best player in the world win, how does that work?
So he's the long shot that every average, you know, common player sort of aspires
to. He's Leicester City.
Okay.
He's the underdog. There's no way that Chris Moneymaker is ever supposed to win that tournament, ever. And the fact that he was able to do it got the intrigue of everybody watching because they're saying, man, this guy qualified for $27? How do I do that?
And there's so many parallels throughout the podcast from Rounders because that's sort of the – what was that, mid to late 90s?
It was late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, and that was sort of the validation, I guess, of the poker world when you got guys like Matt Damon playing in this thing, Edward Norton as well, and also Teddy KGB.
Great characters.
But you have real actors, and it's a great movie. And even if you're not into gambling, it's an entertaining movie from the drama perspective. And I just think that's sort of like the breakthrough moment, I would imagine, for, you know, universal acceptance.
As soon as Moneymaker wins, everybody goes, where can I learn more about this poker thing? Oh, my goodness, there's a movie called Rounders. Really? Let's check that out. I mean, the boom for Rounders was strong when it first came out. It wasn't, like, overwhelming, but it became a cult hit because everybody was so interested in the game that they went back and they watched it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wasn't huge. I was in college and I was a guy and obviously likes gambling. So I'm going to go watch that movie and think it's great. But I guess that is a fascinating question because I've never thought of it like that. Because over time, the main event for the World Series of Poker became the narrative, at least in my eyes, and correct me if I'm wrong, became sort of like not the truest measure of talent. It was more like...
Oh, it's not.
Because there's such volume.
Right,
like,
now...
The best players don't necessarily win.
Right. Right now, you have basically circuits of $100,000 buy-ins or more. And when you think about the best players in the world, they're putting up that $100K, you know, month in, month out. The $10,000 World Series Poker main event is your lottery ticket. And it's a chance to become a millionaire in 2 weeks. And it's a chance to be a really big celebrity in 2 weeks. But the minefield is way too big to expect the best of the best to make it through.
That really was solidified because I was living out there covering the tournament, like Jamie Gold, when he won. It was sort of like, wow, this is just random because of just the sheer volume, and there's only a handful of true poker pros.
Right. It was interesting. I mean, I think the best part about poker was watching the pros and how they navigated it, because you got to see their expertise. And the other best part of poker is seeing this guy from middle of nowhere whose buddies got together, played a series of $100 buy-ins so that one of them could go to the main event, and that guy makes day five, and you're like, that is amazing.
To be fair, like going back to that 2003 hand with Phil Ivey and Moneymaker, Phil Ivey outplayed him.
Right. He did what Phil Ivey does.
Right. He outplayed him, but he just got unlucky. The one out of six chance that Moneymaker had hit. Doesn't mean the odds were in his favor and the odds were wrong. No, the odds are actually right, just that one came up instead of the five.
So here's the thing. If Ivey wins, everybody still sees it on TV, but they see a different kind of story. They probably do get interested, but I don't think the boom comes until there is a true amateur that takes over. I don't think the next year you're seeing Raymer and 2,400 people. You're probably seeing like 1,200, 1,300.
Boom came after that?
The boom started with Moneymaker.
Okay. Interesting. I thought it started before. I was just wrong.
Well, you had Varconi and then you had Moneymaker, but the interest level, the celebrity, the TV, the intrigue, the sponsors, my job, start there.
Right. Yeah.
Everything came after Moneymaker to show what could actually happen in a game that is like watching paint dry if you're there live.
Yeah, no, the TV coverage accelerating with the backstory and the lipstick cameras, like that is so huge. It speeds up the downtime while guys are thinking, things like that. It hooks the viewer because they're thinking too along with the player.
Also, post-production time speeds up the downtime.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because sometimes you could sit there and you could watch for 10 minutes and nothing happens.
And the O3, I mean, let's go back to Moneymaker. The backstory getting to that point was fascinating. I mean, he was betting sports up, what, 60 grand?
He didn't want to be there.
Yeah, because that's right. But even before that, he blew all his money that he and his dad shared. And he was super tight with his dad.
Sports betting, not a good idea sometimes.
Oh, come on. Reckless sports betting, not a good time. But then he blows that money on their online account. And then he's a big poker guy. And then gets into a satellite tournament. And then to your point, you said the top three guys qualify for the World Series.
He wanted fourth place money.
And he wanted fourth place. And somebody else in the online poker table was trying to do the same thing. Because they thought it was a waste to go to the tournament. The World Series Poker main event. He just wanted the cash prize for fourth place.
So I guess in all of this, we have to thank Moneymaker's friend who said, listen, I'll give you the 5K, go win the seat, and go do what you're going to do in Vegas.
And so then you started getting the silent investor thing with all the World Series main event. And you were out there covering it.
Sometimes not so silent investors.
right. But they bankroll people. I mean, what was it, 10 grand?
Yeah.
All along. And so you get guys to pony up five, and then they split the winning. Whatever it is, the preferred stack, to borrow an investment term, is sort of how it all works out. And then you get all these dudes. What's it like out there? I mean, I've covered it, but I want from your perspective as a guy who's more in depth or in deeper in the poker world.
That's a great question, because a lot of the times you don't know actually who is pieces of who. If you go into a poker tournament now, you'll sit at a table and you'll see players trading pieces. Like, hey, what are you doing later? Nothing. You want to go to dinner? Sure. At dinner, you say, all right, I'll swap you 1%. And so there are swaps. So you have that. Then you have people who are actively being staked, whether that's online or in person. So I'd probably say the average main event winner doesn't have more than like 40% of themselves a lot of the time. And I think that's a very interesting piece of the poker world that many people don't talk about.
And are all those percentage points and deals honored?
I would hope so. I mean, the answer is no.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've heard of others not.
There are definitely people who take a stake and then run or not pay up, but that's basically poker suicide.
That happens in life.
Industry.
Right. Yeah, that happens in life as well.
Right.
Look, it's a fascinating podcast, and because they weave in a lot of the movie quotes from Rounders. Although I'm curious, like, why do they have to do it? And not that we are slumming it with Bob Lee, but we don't have the licensing to use movie lines.
Pay that man his money.
I mean, I prefer that. Kai, why aren't we allowed to use the movie quotes?
Hey, man, like you said, you have the suit right here.
Yeah, we have the suit right here, so we gotta.
Listen, all right, we'll bring this up with the upper level executives way above me.
Yeah.
But also, I think it's
better to have Bob Lee.
I think the 30 for 30 podcast is actually in the Behind the Bets feed.
Right.
So I think if you're a subscriber to this podcast, which obviously you are because it is the best podcast that we have.
Downloading, rating, subscribing.
Just download. You could listen
review.
If you want. Sure. Yeah. Do that. But I think it's probably right next to a Behind the Bets.
But it's really well done. Just takes you through the chronologically what happened. And from a production side of things, also from the playing side of things with Chris Moneymaker, has what we call NATS, which is natural sound, from the broadcast of these, the heads-up situation, like I mentioned with Moneymaker and Phil Ivey. He also went head-to-head with Johnny Chan.
Yep. I'll just say before we wrap up that I've been doing this for I've been covering poker 15 years. There are a lot of things in there I didn't know.
Really?
So good. Give it a listen. It's enjoyable. That's the end of my my shill job. So,
in my rounder story that I went head-to-head as well with a legend, I actually went head-to-head with Chris Moneymaker when I was living out there in Vegas and won.
And?
Well, it was a
there's got to be some more details. It was a
celebrity. It was a celebrity event where it was like for charity, and I wasn't even in the event. Like, I didn't pony
so
up.
So you're saying you weren't really in the event, but you beat. Chris
so
Moneymaker.
I got to play like a celebrity like hand, like a couple hands, and it was like this like for like photographer event. Basically, I went head to head, and I went in, and he folded, and I was just heads up. Now he may have been distracted.
So you're saying you beat. A main event champion.
Yes, head-to-head.
Wow.
Now, he was signing autographs and taking pictures and didn't care because there was no real money at stake and it wasn't part of the actual tournament. I don't remember that part.
I didn't hear any of that.
I went head-to-head.
See what context does to a story?
Just like rounders. I went head-to-head with a legend.
So what you're saying is when we need the poker edge to come back, you're hosting it.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm an expert now. I'm up there in the Hall of Fame. No, look, man, it was fun to catch up. It is a fascinating world. You and I have talked off camera. I read Doyle Brunson's book when I was out there. I played in some tournaments, some small cash tournaments that are a lot of fun.
Beat Chris Moneymaker
on the side. But I just was so respectful of what it took to excel in this space that I was like, you know what? Not for me. I'm going to just stick to sports betting. And it was just better for like a guy doing broadcast highlights and all that and my radio show and all that I did for sports betting. But there's obviously overlap. It's so fun. I love the sport of it because – you can do like $50 buy-in tournaments for like 3 hours on a Friday night, free drinks, see what happens. And then if not, you can start your night out.
Yeah, nothing better.
I mean, it's like a pick 'em league, basically. It's a relatively small sunk cost and big payout at the end.
Yeah. Poker tournaments are lottery tickets, but they're a lot of fun.
So now, just legally, what happened? You know, they crashed it. Like you can't do any of it online, right? That was all a big thing. When did that happen? What year?
So for the real story, what's going on right now, hopefully, the movement forward with sports betting is going to help online poker. I really think that a lot of states are going to be one and the same when you pass online Good. Sports betting. Online poker will come with it. Right now, you have just a couple states that are live that you could play online. You could play in Jersey, Nevada, Delaware.
Right.
You could play against each other now, which is a step forward from the way it used to be. But right now, there's a little bit of a low in poker. That said, the main event last year was the biggest main event since 2008. So,
and back in the 2000s is when the government said, hey, no more online poker with offshore websites.
2008, right? UIG, or 2006 UIGEA passed. That was in a defense bill to show just how well things work sometimes. And then in 2011, online poker sites, Full Tilt, Poker Stars, Absolute were shut down by the FBI. That was an interesting day. But
and a lot of people had money tied up, and
yeah,
NetTeller was another thing that.
But thankfully, a lot of people got their money back too. Mm-hmm. PokerStars definitely took care of players and made things right in that aspect. But now you could play, you know, kind of offshore, if you would call it that,
right,
on a couple sites, and then you also have in those states you could play legally online. But the poker world is very different.
And then all the casinos too.
And then all the casinos too. But a lot of casinos have been closing rooms because it doesn't do a lot of business anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Still opportunities to play. Not as big as it used to be, could definitely have a little reboom if certain states act and get them all moving along with sports betting.
With sports betting, right. All right, my man, that was fun. I know you're a busy man. You have to go hang with the other suits.
Suit things.
Yeah, go
really?
Hang out with the other suits.
Man.
But go check out, everyone listening, go check out the 30 for 30 podcast discussing that 2003 main event of the World Series of Poker. Really, really enjoyable listen.
Thanks, Doug.
You got it, my man.
Pay that man his money.
All right. Thanks to Andrew Feldman for that in-depth reflection of the poker boom and actually All In, sparking the poker boom, and all of the 30 for 30 podcasts. Season 4 is out now. Subscribe, rate, and review on the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts. I encourage everyone. It's a very entertaining listen, how they intertwine the movie clips, the broadcast clips, and just the interviews from the players. That just shows the backstory because it was extremely interesting. So I hope you guys all go check out that podcast as well. Thanks to Andrew. Thanks to John Murray, Mr. Director. And we'll catch you back here Wednesday on the College Football Podcast. Phil Steele and also John Murray as well. This has been the Behind the Bets Podcast. I'm Doug Kazarian. Kai, appreciate your efforts as well.
And you, sir.
All right. We'll catch you guys back here.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.